This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Visit the Mountain Carved Church of Lalibela, one of the 8 wonders of the world. Also, check out the North American debut of the National Dance Theater of Ethiopia on the WAMU stage. And of course, don't miss the world stage featuring top artists like Buddy Guy, the Neville Brothers, Habib Kouete, the Wailers, and Taj Mahal. Visit ifest.org online for more information. Brought to you by KPFT 90.1 FM Houston.
This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Walensky.
I'm Deborah Bell.
This is Brian Levinka.
And I'm Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, Dining Out for Life. This coming Thursday, it's a fundraising event for AIDS Foundation Houston. Kelly McCann, the executive director of AFH, will be here to tell us more about it and about what the agency is doing these days. Then, this coming Saturday, April 26th, it's the Transgender Unity Banquet. Jennifer Renee will host a discussion of what's in store for the evening, the keynote speaker, and a silent auction. On May 2nd, the members of Wishing Chair will be hosting a Folks and Roll house concert in Houston. J.D. Doyle will talk with them about that. Nancy Ford and Deborah Bell will talk about this year's Kindred Spirits celebration on our Lesbian Affairs segment. And we'll have our regular features from This Way Out, including News Wrap.
I'm Erica Springer.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 19th, 2008. Colombia's Constitutional Court has decided that same-gender couples should be given the same government pension and health benefits as heterosexual married partners. This week's ruling said that denying those benefits to gay and lesbian couples would violate the principles of non-discrimination and human dignity protected by international law. The same court ruled last year that same-gender couples were entitled to the same property rights as heterosexual couples. In that case, the court carefully noted that full legal recognition of same-gender couples, such as through civil unions, was the province of legislators. Colombia's Congress then provisionally passed a bill giving same-gender couples most of the same rights as heterosexual married couples. President Alvaro Uribe said he would sign the measure into law, but it died in a procedural move after the South American country's powerful Roman Catholic Church warned lawmakers that the bill violated Vatican policy and that they could be denied the sacraments for supporting it.
Italy has taken a major swing to the right, and the country's LGBT community is bracing for possible repercussions. The party of 71-year-old former Prime Minister and conservative media magnate Silvio Berlusconi won a convincing victory in last week's parliamentary elections. With close ties to the Vatican, Berlusconi has been a staunch opponent of LGBT equality. Thanks to the support of right-wing allies, including an anti-immigrant and small neo-fascist parties, Berlusconi's People of Freedom Party will reportedly enjoy a comfortable majority in both the Chamber of Deputies and the Senate. Pioneering transgender legislator Vladimir Luxuria was among several progressives to lose re-election bids. Berlusconi's 2001 through 2006 years as prime minister were Italy's longest since the end of World War II, before he was ousted by the left-of-center and generally queer-supportive Romano Prodi. Prodi's contentious 9-party coalition government, ranging from communist to Vatican-affiliated, disintegrated late last year. A divisive attempt to enact civil partnership legislation, which Prodi had promised during his campaign, was seen as a significant factor in the coalition's collapse. Berlusconi will now lead Italy's 63rd government since 1945.
And in what some Italian LGBT activists fear is a signal of things to come, a mob of young people late this week burst into Rome's LGBT center, the Medio Miali Homosexual Cultural Circle. They shouted anti-gay and anti-Semitic slogans and support for Benito Mussolini, Italy's World War II-era dictator, as they ransacked the building. There were no injuries reported among those who were at the center during the melee, and police say they're searching for the perpetrators.
Meanwhile, police have raided the offices of the Lambda Istanbul Cultural Center, the largest LGBT civil rights organization in Turkey, for the second time this year. A dozen police officers had a search warrant claiming the center was suspected of being a business that facilitates prostitution, acts as a go-between, and provides a place for prostitution, which are violations of Article 227 of Turkey's Penal Code. The officers took a list of Lambda Istanbul's members and other organizational documents during a two-hour search of the building. The raid took place just days before a court hearing in a case against Lambda Istanbul brought by the Istanbul Governor's Office, which accuses the group of violating Turkish moral values and its family structure. Human Rights Watch Director of LGBT Programs, Scott Long, said in a statement that what's really immoral is the Istanbul authorities' campaign against Lambda Istanbul for protecting the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people.
Human Rights Watch is also condemning a police raid on Labrys and its LGBT community center in Kyrgyzstan. Human Rights Watch says it's also the second time that that group has been targeted. Labrys was hosting a dinner at the center for local and international LGBT rights groups on April 8th, when three officers entered without a warrant, first threatening to arrest anyone without identification. Citizens in the Central Asian country aren't required to carry a passport or an identity card, but critics say that police often use ID checks to humiliate and arbitrarily arrest people. The officers then searched desks and opened private locked files at the center, which since its February 2008 opening has also served as a shelter for transgender people and women who've been victims of violence. According to a Labrys spokesperson, police demanded to see the group's registration documents, rent statements, and other organizational information. Human Rights Watch's Scott Long called it an outrage that police can barge into a building for no reason, threaten people, and search private files.
Following reports here and elsewhere of a police crackdown on gay bathhouses in Beijing, said to be tied to a cleanup prior to the upcoming Olympic Games, a posting on a Singaporean gay email list charges that a similar operation is underway in Shanghai. Three or four of the major clubs have been closed by the police following raids, the report said. Not sure if this is a sign of things to come. Other recent alleged police actions against gay men in Beijing include a bar raid and temporary closure, crackdowns in cruisy parks, and arrests of sex workers tracked down via their web postings.
Updating our report last week, an official at the European Broadcasting Union reports being given a guarantee for the safety of delegations, press, and fans issued by the president of Serbia for people attending the annual Eurovision Song Contest being held this year in Belgrade. Several Serbian media outlets have reported that thousands of gay and lesbian people are coming to Belgrade for the popular televised event next month. But a local official told reporters that we are not organizing their arrival, therefore we cannot take care of their security. Human rights activists have raised concerns that Westerners in general may be victimized by violent nationalist right-wing elements in the country. Gay men are a specific target, according to the president of the fascist organization Obraz, in the pages of the daily newspaper Allo last week. The story referred to the continent-wide Eurovision competition as Gay Youth Day.
But in the U.S., leaders of the Utah-based Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have agreed to meet with the LGBT Mormon group Affirmation in August, according to a report in the Salt Lake Tribune. The first ever meeting was said to have been authorized by the church's new president, Thomas S. Monson. Affirmation's assistant executive director, Dave Melson, told the Tribune that they hope to discuss such problems as lesbi-gay Mormons being kicked out of their homes for coming out, being told to marry someone of the opposite sex to stay in the church's good graces, and being expelled from Brigham Young University for going to gay bars.
Also in Utah, same-gender and heterosexual domestic partners began registering their relationships in Salt Lake this week. The city council unanimously approved the registry in February, but the measure ran into trouble with the legislature over its name. The state house approved the ordinance earlier this month with assurances it wouldn't be called a domestic partner registry, which some lawmakers said violated a state constitutional amendment banning same-gender marriage. It's therefore called a mutual commitment registry and is open to adult unmarried couples who live together in an interdependent relationship. The registry had been a campaign promise by Mayor Ralph Becker. His spokesperson said that the resulting certificate could be used to demonstrate eligibility for domestic partner health insurance at companies that offer such benefits. Registered couples also have visitation rights at city hospitals when a partner is ill and are entitled to family rates at facilities operated by the city. The first couple to register was Lisa LeDuc and Brandy Balkin, who've been together for 7 years. Balkin told the Salt Lake Tribune that it's not every day you get to be a gay celebrity.
And finally, two more gay celebrities officially exited the closet this week. As one wag asked, hath hell frozen over? 21-year-old Azaria Southworth, the producer and host of the popular Christian youth TV show The Remix, has publicly announced that he's gay. This has been a long time coming, he told the Nashville-based publication Out and About. I'm in a place where I'm at peace with my faith, friends, family, and more importantly, myself. Expressing uncertainty about his TV future, he said that, I know I will be cut off from many within the Christian community, but I believe by me living my life honestly and authentically now, I am able to be a better person and a better Christian. The Remix, a syndicated music show featuring popular Christian performers, is seen on three networks in more than 128 million homes worldwide.
Also coming out this week in the pages of Toronto's Globe and Mail newspaper was 28-year-old Canadian-born actor Luke McFarlane, a regular on the U.S. ABC TV series Brothers and Sisters. McFarlane says he chose to come out now because his gay character on the show, Scotty Wandell, exchanges vows with another character, Kevin Walker, in next month's season finale. He also told the newspaper that he might like to get married someday, although he declined to say whether or not he currently has a boyfriend. Editor Michael Jensen noted on the AfterElton.com website that Neil Patrick Harris and T.R. Knight, two of television's other out gay actors, both play heterosexuals. McFarlane's coming out marks the first time an out actor on network television has played such a prominent gay role.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 19th, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Erica Springer.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
Dining Out for Life with Kelly McCann. That's next.
8-track heart, got a broke rewind. He upped that stuff till he gone blind. He flies like a kite, high from the ground. The firebird flies, fame coming down. He's a bump in the road,
bump in the road.
A bee on the
on the vine,
birds in flight, a long yellow line in the trail of heart of a tin can sky, already gone with the wink of an eye. Life's a shotgun,
life's a shotgun,
growing mean. Love's a red light. A shotgun,
life's a shotgun,
growing mean,
growing mean.
was Heskel from their 2007 CD Soundtrack for an Aneurysm, and a song named Gasoline. This is Queer Voices.
This Thursday, one of my favorite events of the year is coming up. We as Houstonians absolutely love to eat, and this is the Dine Out for Life event on Thursday, and in the studio we have the wonderful Kelly McCann from AFH.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And myself, Brian Levinka, and Jack Valinsky. And so, what's going on Thursday? How can people to partake of this wonderful event?
Well, like you, Brian, I love this event, in part because it does involve going out to eat, but the other part that I love about it is just so easy. It is brilliantly simple, this idea. Dining Out for Life happens this Thursday, April the 24th, and the concept is this. We have over 50 different restaurants who have chosen to participate, to partner with us, and these restaurants have agreed to give AFH, to donate to AIDS Foundation Houston, fully 33% of their food proceeds all day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so all we have to do as citizens is wake up hungry and make sure we go out to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner at some of these wonderful restaurants, and that's it.
So it's a full day fundraising just by picking out.
Exactly.
Just find three restaurants and just spend the money.
That's right. And, you know, it is wonderful that the restaurants were starting to expand. This is just our second year to bring Dining Out for Life back to Houston. And we've now got over 50 restaurants. Of course, I will admit the greatest number of the restaurants are in either the Montrose or Midtown area.
Right.
But we started branching out now. There's some out in West Houston and like in the Memorial area, Carmelo's, and up on off the Northwest Freeway in the near northwest part of town. We've even got some restaurants. And I'd like to just mention that Itty Bitty Burger Barn on Pinemont up there, we're very pleased to have them on board. They're actually going to donate 50% of their proceeds to us that day.
Excellent. And as we know, the gays and lesbians are not just in Montrose and Midtown nowadays. You know,
that is
reaching
right.
out.
I'm one of them, I have to admit. 4 years now I've been outside the loop.
Oh, no, not OTO.
I'm still in a support group.
I start getting itchy if I leave the loop for a long period of time. So where does this money go to?
Well, you know, AIDS Foundation Houston, we are the oldest AIDS service organization in the state of Texas, and we provide...
Clap, clap, clap for that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, we're very happy to still be able to provide services to people who need them, but we'll be the happiest people to go out of business if they ever come up with a cure for this. But what we do is we provide a full array of supportive services and educational programs. So this money will go to help our housing programs, Stone Soup Food Pantry that you and I were talking about a little while ago, which the Stone Soup program is the only AIDS-related food assistance program in the greater Houston area. It'll also help our camp programs and programs for children. You know, we do
Camp Hope
for HIV-positive kids. We also do camps in Africa through our partnership with the Baylor International Pediatric AIDS Initiative. And of course, we've launched a teen leadership forum, too, which takes young people who are too old for camp, but not quite ready for life as an HIV-positive adult. We take them for a full week. We do it on a college campus. It's University of Houston this year. And we talk about issues and give them training around things they're going to need to know about their medical issues, dating and disclosing their status, and even sexuality and the potential of parenthood. So this money is going to go to support any and all of those kind of programs.
I can't think of an easier way to raise money than to just go eat and, you know, it's donated. I've seen this around the country. Is this more of a national program, Dining Out for Life?
You know, thank you for mentioning that, because I think some of the listeners may remember that back in the very early 90s, there was Dining Out for Life here in Houston. This program started in Philadelphia in 1991, and it has grown to now an international group of organizations in the United States and Canada that actually have to be approved as members of Dining Out for Life International, and then we all put on these Dining Out for Life events on the same day in across the United States and Canada. And, you know, when it was here in Houston before in the early 90s, it was actually in support of Body Positive, if you remember Body Positive. And I think when Legacy, at the time it was Montrose Clinic, when they merged and took over Body Positive, I think the event went away. And when we had the opportunity to buy the license and bring it back, like you, I thought, this is the easiest idea. It's the best no-brainer fundraiser in the world, because we eat out more than just about any other city.
My kitchen is a museum. I don't even look. I just walk through it and I'm like, oh, there it is.
That's right.
I just would rather eat out. So.
Well, and I'm like you. If I didn't have a refrigerator or a microwave, I'd be in trouble. But my oven is only turned on once a year to clean it.
So do we want to talk about some of the places people can go?
I'd love to mention some of our wonderful partners, say, here in the Montrose area. Have to mention Riva's. Riva's has been a great partner of ours for a number of years.
Also with
around.
The AIDS Walk, for sure.
Exactly. Misty Blue. Yeah. Hey, Misty.
Hey,
and then we've got Barnaby's, and it's all the Barnaby's locations.
Yes.
And remember, that includes the Baby Barnaby's for Breakfast.
Yeah.
And then we've got Nico Nico's and La Strada.
These are places everybody goes all the time. I mean,
oh yeah, these are some of the most popular and the best restaurants in the area. And then the place that you mentioned you're going out to eat.
Davey and I are going to Julia's Bistro. So,
and that is a wonderful restaurant, by the way.
It's right off. It's on Alabama at Main, I think. Right.
Yes.
Off the light rail. So.
That is right. Yeah. So you don't even have to drive if
I know,
you don't want
exactly.
to. And then we've got and I'm not looking at the list.
Here's
so
the list.
Okay, let me double check. Oh yeah, for like some lunchtime ideas, Carter and Cooley Company and. Thai Spice is on board. And, you know, I mentioned that we've got a couple of new ones on for this year, and that included Tila's. And I was that's one of the ones that I'm probably going to go and have some lunch at Tila's.
Is that Tila's or Tiela's? You know, there's two.
That is a very good point. Yeah, Tiela's on West Dallas. We're going to hit them up and hopefully get them on board next year. But for now, this is Tila's on that curve, that Shepherd curve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a wonderful restaurant. And the Daily Review Cafe is another one on West Gray that has just a great
lunch.
You know,
it was really hard kind of trying to pick out which restaurant I'm going to do for what, you know?
Well, you know, we like to hear that because that's when we step in and say, we encourage you to select three different restaurants that day.
Well, I think we should mention Tafia in Midtown.
Tafia, and that's Monica
Pope's
place.
Oh, I love Monica's food.
Yeah, that is. So you can see what's really nice about this is we've been able to secure partnerships with a variety of restaurants. So you've got your very high-end kind of fine dining restaurants, and then also just your more normal kind of everyday establishments, and then even some relatively inexpensive places.
Absolutely. I would like to mention Tarte Cafe.
Oh, yeah. And if y'all have never had anything from Tarte, now I haven't eaten anything but the dessert ones.
Well, it's both dessert and savory tarts.
Yes.
My friend John Ray owns it, and it's great.
Delicious. And those cookies, what are those cookies called?
They're called Sissies.
That's right, Sissies. Why didn't I remember that?
Yeah, they're so good. They're kind of addictive, so I don't know what's in them. Some sort of magical elixir or something. Huh?
Ah, very good.
Yes.
Well, but you know, the thing that is I'd like to just remind people about is this is we're having fun with this. This is a great fundraiser, and it is a lot of fun. It's a way for you to even register to win prizes because we've got a raffle. You don't have to dine or donate in order to sign up for the raffle, but we've got stuff like two round-trip first-class tickets on Continental Airlines anywhere in the contiguous 48,
Woo-hoo.
I believe. Yes.
That would be get a flight out.
Get a flight, you know. You could actually make money by going out to dinner. But I'd also like to remind everyone that while we do not want to make your dining experience a morose or somber occasion, we want you to go out and have fun with friends. Just want to remind everyone about how important it is that we continue to raise funds and awareness around HIV and AIDS. You know, especially in mainstream media, you're just not hearing much about HIV anymore.
No.
And I think that is in part because of the great advances in medication and people are living longer, but we still need to remember that between 40 and 60,000 Americans become infected every year, and it is an incredibly difficult illness to live with. I mean, thank goodness there are medications that keep you healthy, but you've got to change your lifestyle, you've got to take your meds exactly as prescribed, you've got to tend to your health, and it's one other thing, not to sound mercenary, but it's not a cheap illness to have. It's quite expensive.
Unfortunately, mostly a financial issue these days with the medications.
Do you know, there was a study that was done out of four medical schools, and they this was in 2004. They determined that if someone contracts HIV, on average, they can live 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in that 23 years, they will rack up. And this is just the cost for routine medication and routine medical care. This is not any sort of estimation about catastrophic illness, but their price tag for HIV over the course of that 23 years is $619,000.
Oh my gosh.
And if you think about over 1 million people in our country are already living with HIV, that is a dollar amount that could exponentially increase and wipe out our economy. So, you know, whatever appeals to you, if it's the compassionate part, if it's the bottom line part, the best thing you need to know is don't get infected with HIV. Prevent this illness, and we're going to help you do that by continuing to provide education and social marketing messages. And you're going to help us do that by going out to eat, Dining Out for Life, this Thursday, April the 24th. And you can go to our website.
Oh, that's a good point.
We've got over 50 restaurants, and they are at diningoutforlife.com. That's diningoutforlife.com. You can check out the restaurants and then dine out, fight AIDS.
Now, is that a Houston-based website, or do they have to go and find Houston?
Actually, what will happen when you go to Dining Out for Life, you will see the map of the United States, and there'll be a red ribbon on every geographic location where there is an event. And click on the ribbon that is Houston. Actually, from what I'm looking at it, it looks like they placed it a little closer to Corpus Christi, Coastal Bend. But it's the only one on the Texas Gulf Coast. So click on that ribbon. It'll pull up the Houston homepage. And then you'll see participating restaurants. Click there, and you'll see that whole list.
Very good. Well, we're getting a message that PFLAG will actually be at the Boom Boom Room on Yale, which is a great restaurant.
It is. I know Cat Mims. Yeah, that's a wonderful place. That's actually where I spent my Dining Out for Life last year. And Cat made beef Wellington, wasn't it? Oh, I'm sorry. Beef bourguignon. Forgive me, Cat.
I like her Frito pie.
Now, see, that's more my speed.
I just get all messy, Fritos and chili.
Frito pie and a beer.
And a beer, yeah. Exactly.
Bourguignon, yeah, what do I know?
Okay, so can you tell us more about AFH and kind of the other things you do throughout the year? I know y'all do so many different things.
Well, you know, one of the things that we are proud of is, you know, our AIDS walk that just happened back in March. And I want you to know we're still tallying up the dollars. But if all goes well and if we can get in all the money we expect to, we're going to have our first ever $1 million walk.
Congratulations.
And if that happens, I will definitely get a press release over here to y'all right away.
Because I will be first to announce it. And, you know, this year the weather was perfect. I mean, couldn't have asked for a better weather.
You know, it was a beautiful day for this year's walk, and everything just happened so easily, and that's good that it seemed to go so easily, because, you know, we work on this event for about 6 months out of the entire year. So keep in mind, I'm happy to report next year will be our 20th AIDS Walk Houston, so we're going to really blow it out. We're going to have a good time.
Well, and you always have a good time.
Thank you for that. We try and make it a good time.
The first year I did it was the year that it poured down rain the whole time.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, I raised all this money. I've got to get out here and walk. And, you know, it's very rewarding.
And, you know, a lot of people joined you, even in that pouring down rain,
yeah,
which kind of took me by surprise.
You know, my favorite thing is to see the river of people kind of going down Allen Parkway with the different colored shirts.
Yes.
That's just...
It is an amazing sight. And you know, in addition to the walk, we do... Mukuru. I don't know if everyone's heard of that or seen the billboards. It's Mukuru, and Mukuru is our Arts for AIDS series, and it's named after Mukuru, who was an African deity of compassion. And this Arts for AIDS series was something that we brought to the Houston community about 3 years ago. We have an annual art auction, but the cornerstone, I guess, of our Arts for AIDS, our Mukuru series, are these classical musical performances, and it is a way that we have tried to reach a different audience and to help build a bridge between the classical music aficionados and the social justice cause of AIDS, and that series will be starting our fourth season this September. So be on the lookout for our Mukuru events.
Yes, and then around World AIDS Day, you have.
Thank you. Yes, you know, Brian is very well informed.
I'm very involved with all this stuff. So.
I know you are. You are almost like an employee, Brian. You're so good to us. Thank you. Our World AIDS Day luncheon, you know, this year we had a great time. It was our 25th anniversary, and so that was 07. We had Carson Kressley come in and was very entertaining. He called me Butch Light, which everybody had this look of horror on their face.
And like,
I was like, oh, girl, you called me that last night at happy hour. It's old. Think of something new now. But you know, he was great fun. It was great. A great luncheon. And again, It's a wonderful event, and we even warranted being mentioned in Shelby Hodges' column as one of the best luncheons of the year.
Yeah, I think that was our Paper City write-up.
Yes. All the great press that we got off of that. And it's because we try and make it fun, we make it entertaining and informational, and then we also remind people the reason that we do the work that we do, and we get you out within an hour. And when you're doing a luncheon, that's very important to be efficient. And we are definitely mindful of the time. So we think we do these events very well.
Well, and I think you're getting recognition for that because congratulations to yourself for being elected the female Grand Marshal for the Pride 30th anniversary Pride Parade. And then AIDS Foundation Houston was selected as the honorary organizational.
That is right. We are the organizational Grand Marshal, and I am so proud, and so is everyone at AFH. We've got almost 100 staff members, and every single one of us are absolutely thrilled. And, you know, I learned something about the Pride Parade recently. It is the second largest parade in the city of Houston, and neck and neck with the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Really?
And so that just increased the pride that we had that we can get out there and show not only the members of our community and the clients that we serve, but 100,000 other Houstonians
exactly.
that we are here, we've been here, and we'll be here until we're not needed any longer.
And then also, Julie Eberle was also right.
Yes, you know, very exciting. Julie Eberle, who just left AFH recently. She was our director of development for a long time, and Julie is a great friend of the gay community.
I love Julie.
She is wonderful, and she's still a friend to AFH and mm-hmm. will be helping us in our fundraising efforts. And, you know, even Mark Cohen, who is our director of camp and mm-hmm. volunteers, Mark was nominated for male. So AFH got 3 out of 4 this year.
Well, he went up against Dalton. I mean,
and that's tough. That's tough competition.
Yeah, I don't know.
But Dalton's almost like a part of the family, too. I mean, he's a great friend of our organization and of me personally. So
well, he's a friend of the community. I mean, I don't know who's going to take pictures this year.
Oh, that's a good point. Christopher Bound will be busy taking pictures for Dalton, I hope. Yeah, please, somebody. I've got to get a picture for my mother.
My running joke is that there's clones of Dalton because he seems to be everywhere at the same time in multiple
that
events.
That is exactly right. I don't know how he does it.
I don't know either. So let's recap. This Thursday, one of my favorite events of the year, Dining Out for Life, because it takes advantage of my passion of eating out. And if you haven't seen, there's the website, diningoutforlife.com, has all the list of restaurants around Houston, Midtown Montrose, even Galleria of the Heights, downtown, Washington Corridor, West Houston. It's pretty much everywhere, so check that out.
And keep looking for us year after year after year. You'll be seeing Dining Out for Life on the fourth Thursday of April. That is the set date for all the organizations that put on this event around the United States and Canada. So, yes, this year it's this Thursday, April the 24th. And please do check out the website, and you'll see the full list of over 50 participating restaurants.
Absolutely. So grab your friends and dine out for life.
Have a great time, and don't forget to sign up for the raffle.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kit.
Thanks.
Lesbian Affairs. Oh my gosh, Lesbian Affairs? Yeah, it's a segment where Nancy Ford will talk with Deborah Bell about this year's Kindred Spirits celebration. from the album, the Pink album, actually. That was Scott Free, Like a Girl. This is Queer Voices.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, April 26th is just such a popular day. There's just so many things happening.
There are.
And we're all going to get to just eat all day on Thursday. And then we have to have some recovery time because on Saturday night, not only is there the Transgender Unity Banquet.
The Transgender Unity Banquet.
Which we'll be talking about some more.
Absolutely.
But right
we're
now.
We're going to have a segment later on in the show.
We have the ever lovely Nancy Ford with us.
Hi, gang.
And hi. Nancy, you go way back to the early days of when there was a little club called Kindred Spirits.
Oh, that it takes me right back to when I was just visiting here from Ohio. I just happened to be visiting Houston and my girlfriend at the time, and there was this new club opening called Kindred Spirits. Just happened to be here for the opening night
really?
Of that. Just happened
really?
To be here, and that's I looked in
and
there, that sea of women.
Herstory.
The rest is herstory, honey. I never looked back. So that bar, it closed. There are two locations, but it closed in the late 80s. And Marion Coleman opened it, and so many people loved that bar. It was such a community hub. It was before we had any type of community center or anything like that. So many people came out and enjoyed the place.
Well,
it was safe. It was clean. We had to start having reunions for it after it closed.
I was quite a fan of the old Bacchus on Lovett Boulevard because that was kind of like where all my homegirls hung out. But I kind of had my coming out experience weekend.
Right.
It was a Valentine's Day weekend, and they had, like, all these performers. I mean, just performer after performer,
yeah.
Lesbian performers. And I spent the whole weekend at Kindred Spirits.
And the original bar.
Mm-hmm.
On Buffalo Speedway.
I really have a soft spot in my heart for that place.
Right.
I love the way it was arranged. And I have to tell you a funny story. It's
okay.
One of my favorite.
But then we're going to get to the
fundraiser. Oh, we're going to tell everybody.
Okay.
They're going to hear about it.
I want to hear the funny stories.
But
I'm going to sit in here and hear the stuff.
Of a Friday or a Saturday night when the bar was really packed, you know, we're out there on the dance floor dancing. They had the original bar had the dance floor downstairs, and upstairs they had pool tables, and they had bars on both levels.
And we try to recreate that as much as possible.
And we're dancing and everything. And I see this guy come in the door with a cowboy hat on. And he comes in, and because, you know, the policy was you just let people, they pay their cover charges, they come in, right? So he literally gets to about the middle of the room, and he looks around. He looks to his right. He looks to his left. He turns around and walks back out the door with that deer in the headlights look.
Well, I don't know if he's going to be there this weekend.
At what point did the synapses fire where he said, I don't think I'm in the right place.
Oh, that's
wrong
funny.
Place.
So, yeah. People missed the club. They missed
it. People missed it tremendously about 7 years ago. Enough people had come to Marion Coleman and said, hey, we miss everybody. We want to get together again. She started with a committee putting together the Kindred Spirits reunion celebrations. Over the course of the last, 6 years, this is our seventh year, we've raised more than $80,000 for women's charities here in Houston.
$80,000.
That's wonderful.
That's no
Thank
chump
you.
Change.
Congratulations it's
on
no
that.
Chump change. Thank you very much. We're very proud of that. Our beneficiaries, our sisters, who we love, of course, all of them we love, Lesbian Health Initiative. We're also supporting Bering Support Network and as Houston Buyers Club. And if I may, I'd love to share a story with you. One of the just the impact that these funds can make for folks. Our friend Marion Coleman tells a story of one time she was in Houston Buyers Club, and there was a woman in there who was recovering from cancer. And she was obviously still very ill and had come in to buy a number of the nutritional supplements and vitamins that you can get at wonderful Houston Buyers Club here in Montrose. And the woman was mistaken in that she thought it was just a free service, that you walk in and she thought you got your stuff and you didn't
and
have to pay
out.
For it. You know, bless her heart, you know, wouldn't
you
that
know,
be wonderful?
I didn't think that way about
that
some of the stores I go to.
Well, as a matter of fact, this woman, you know, got up to the counter and said, you know, realized that, you know, she was being charged for this. And fortunately, a gentleman in line overheard the conversation and offered to pay her bill and did so.
That was like
incredible?
One of them random acts of kindness.
It was a random
you hear about.
That's exactly what it was. But Marion Coleman was there at the time and witnessed this, and this is how the seed was planted for them to be a beneficiary. But we know that these funds are used by people who really, really need them. We fund Lesbian Health Initiative, Rainbow Fair, mammograms. Which are, we know how important those are. We've,
I think June 7th is
June
the next
7th, that is coming up.
Initiative, health fair, and yes, those are so vital.
It is.
There are women whose lives are saved because they're going and getting health care that they wouldn't otherwise.
Exactly. But I don't want you to think that this is just all somber and raising money for sick people and everything. It is, because it is absolutely not.
Oh, no, because I've been to some of them. And
oh, it is such a good time. And I want you two to know, and our listening audience to know, that we have already pre-sold twice as many tickets as we ever, ever had.
Wow.
Oh,
we already have.
That's wonderful.
Thank you very much.
About how many does that mean?
That means about 800 women have already committed to
I'm
be
so
in there.
There.
And so we know how many then.
No. You had a little slip of the tongue there, which is a terrible thing for a lesbian to do.
I'm sorry, what
you
did I say?
You said they committed, and we know better.
Well, committed for one evening. That's my kind of commitment,
too. Oh,
that's
the commitment I understand.
Exactly. That's a long-term relationship, you know, 8 to 2. But it's at the Hornberger Center in the medical center. There's a little bit of construction around there, but we're going to have some security folks to lead you on in. Hornberger Center at the in the med center. And this is our last year to have it at the Edwin R.
Really?
Hornberger. Yes,
really?
It's being demolished. And
it's not.
It truly is. But that's okay. We have first dibs on the very, very first event at the new center that's replacing it just a little bit down the street.
Oh,
so we're
okay.
Already cooking for 2009.
All right.
We already have raffle items of very lovely and expensive jewelry for 2009, but we also have some wonderful raffle prizes that we'll be auctioning off and giving away at the big dance. This Saturday night, we've got hotel stays, you know, weekends. We've got restaurants. We've got, I can't remember. Oh, beautiful baskets of wine, too. One red, one white. And can you tell I'm excited?
I am so
excited about all this.
And we should say, you know, give kind of some credit to Nancy Ford. She's an entertainer, a comic, a writer. She is
editor.
And let's throw this in.
Some highfalutin editor at Outsmart Magazine.
Kindred Spirits was the very first gay place that I ever performed. So it has a very, very special spot
in my heart.
And I'm so, you know, I'm the women on this committee are just, I just came from a meeting, in fact, and you know how sometimes you go to a committee meeting and you think, oh my God, are we ever going to get through this stuff? And it's just, you know, and you know, not to berate our organizations, but you know, sometimes it just, things just drag on. I'll tell you what, working with these women, I've been on the committee for a couple, 3 years now. I love these women. Oh, my God. We are so...
You mean you're still talking to them all this time?
Not only
That's
talking
amazing.
To them, we are truly, truly a family. And we can't wait to see everybody come out on Saturday night to just join the family and dance and eat cookies.
There's going to be cookies?
There's going to be cookies. And
Girl Scout cookies?
Well, you can
no,
make
No, I just
Girl
want
Scout.
The Girl Scout.
We just want the Girl Scout.
Hush, Jennifer. Well, and for those of us who have been around Houston most of our lives, and for me that's a long time, the Hornberger Center was the ballroom, the grand ballroom
Shamrock Hilton,
of
yes.
the infamous Shamrock Hilton
yes.
Hotel. And, I mean, I just couldn't believe when they tore it down. So
I had a little bit of history there, indeed. It's kind of a fun little historical
so
marker for me.
It's kind of sad to hear that the other that the ballroom is also going. But Okay, what's the entertainment? There's got to be some music happening.
And you know, DJ Terry Flores from Bocados is going to spin for us again. She's usually there and does a fabulous job. Oh,
and wonderful. You know, the Gay Men's Chorus just did that fabulous show of 80s music.
Oh, yeah?
Of course, that was when I was coming out, sure. The early 80s.
Sure.
And so that was the music that we were dancing to.
Well, we will be dancing
at Kindred Spirits.
We will be dancing to 80s music and 90s and more contemporary, just about anything you want. Terry is really, really good at feeling the crowd and knowing what they want. Also, I want to mention, you need to come out and see if you can spot your photograph from days gone by.
Uh-oh.
Because our committee member, Judy Woods, does a fabulous, fabulous photographic montage that's up on the big screen. You'll come in, you'll see the photo montage of all the past parties and
we
the
get to laugh
spirits.
At the way our hair looked and what clothes we wore.
Exactly,
right?
and there are pool tables there, pinball machines, the big green and white Kindred Spirits logo. We do the best we can.
They're
to,
really getting into it.
Well, we
try
to recreate
the feel. I'm looking for a size 22 bustier or low-cut top to wear that evening. So if anyone has such an item that they would loan me, contact me at Deborah@queervoices.org. The tickets, there's a website.
There is a website, kindredspiritshouston.org. Is it com or org?
I think it's com.
KindredSpiritsHouston.org.
Oh, it's an org.
We're a subsidiary of a Christmas song fest.
It's hard to keep up with all those comms and orgs.
KindredSpiritsHouston.org. The big party is this Saturday night. It starts at 8 at the Hornberger Center. $20 in advance.
And
those
prices,
pretty much. I'm sorry, but it's not very much at all. Hardly anything.
Yeah,
it's more at the door, so buy your
tickets. Yeah, so online. It's like four lattes at Starbucks.
Let me say it's the cheapest fundraiser that night.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's true.
and then there's also some places around town that you can go ahead and get that.
At Bocados, you can get it. You can get it at The Shop, the hair place right up here on Montrose, or on Westheimer in Montrose. DeCapo's. Oh, where else? Houston Buyers Club. Just go to the website. KindredSpiritsHouston.org.
Well, we want to send a thank you out to Marion Coleman for all the work that she puts into this and keeping it going, bringing to us originally. And then, Nancy, you've been part of the committee for a number of years.
Thrilled
and some other great women in the community, making it happen, making a special night for the women and friends. It's not women only.
No, absolutely.
And
we have a good
and Jennifer would be there if she wasn't otherwise occupied that evening.
I'm emceeing the Unity Banquet.
This is my segment. Let's not talk about...
This is Nancy's show. So
I just want you to know why I'm not going to be there.
So
I
before
it.
We close off, my lovely, is there anything that you want to share that we didn't get to?
Just want to send a shout out to my Kindred Spirit sisters.
All right.
I guess that would be... Okay, go around the table. Trudy, Iris, Renee, Debbie, Saul, Trish, I'm going to miss people, Bridget, Sally, Betty, I know I'm missing people, you know I love you, don't hold it against me. I'll just see you this Saturday night at the Hornberger Center. It's the Kindred Spirits reunion party. It starts at 8 o'clock. I won't tell you the prices, but it's cheap. It's so much fun. Come on out.
Yes. And some of us are planning on getting together for dinner over at Hollywood on Montrose at 6 p.m.
Oh, so if you really want to extend...
So if you want to come to dinner before going out, come on over there, and then we'll all go over to KS Celebration.
Absolutely. It's
going
to be a fabulous time. Thanks so much.
Nancy Ford, thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
Thy kingdom come to every nation. Thy will be done in everything we do. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're you.
service, to build the schools, to dig the well, and deliver us from the creepy preachers with their narrow minds and very wide lapels. Thy kingdom come to every
away the guns. before. Walked in and out that door, and now I find myself standing here again. You tell me this is new, 'cause this time it's with you, and you're not like any other man I knew. It's not so easy to have lost and then to try to love again. And so I'm searching for the answers that will tell me how to begin. What will I do? What will I say? When you look at me that way, what will I feel? How will it be to have your body next to me? Just might let you in. You make me feel at ease. I've longed for days like these, but part of me still thinks I'm better off alone. Well, I'm looking for some kind of sign to let me know it's all okay. 'Cause when I met you, I had
from his 2006 CD and a song titled What Am I Gonna Do With You? The CD's name, Faith Unashamed. Before that, from the year 2000 and an album called The Edge, which is about gun violence, Holly Near, If It Were Up to Me. And before that, Susan Werner, Our Father, from her 2007 CD, The Gospel Truth.
And for those of you who don't have anything to do this weekend, Galveston Island is hosting its wet party. It will happen this Saturday at the Balinese Room, the famous Balinese Room, from 2 to 8. There's an after hours with DJ Special K from KRBE, and then it ends on Sunday at the Third Coast Beach Bar. All information can be found at wetgalveston.com.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Built of oak and stone. take my stand. If you want to know me, you'll have to take me as I am. Everybody's got their words to say, but I do just as I please. I'm the many architects, and I've been to their design. A fool as a newlywed, yeah, call the place and time. This house is built of oak and stone. Such voluntary friends. My clothes will all look cigarettes, gasoline and beer. Sipping through the hands of strangers, I find my way back here. This house is built of oak and stone. Here I make my stand. If you want to know,
this is J.D. Doyle, and that was just a taste of the music of Wishing Chair. It was called This House. I love that song. It's from their latest release, Folk and Roll. And Wishing Chair is made up of Kira Hartwood and Miriam Davidson, and they've recently released their seventh CD since 1996. I very much respect their talent, so I'm very pleased to announce that they will be in Houston on Friday, May 2nd. And this interview will talk about their concert, and we'll give information about that a little later, so you might want to get a pencil paper ready. And we're speaking with Kaya Hartwood. Welcome to Queer Voices. Hello, are we connected?
Huh, I guess not.
Oh, there you are.
Kaya, are you there?
I can barely hear it.
We can barely hear you.
I can hear, I guess not. That's what I heard.
Well, maybe we should call her back and try again.
Let's put a little more of the song on, maybe, or whatever you want, Glenn.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll go back to the Wishing Chair.
It's built of oak and stone. Here I make my stand. If you want to know me, you'll have to take me as I am. Everybody's got their words to say, but I do just as I please. I'm the many architects, and I've been to their design. A fool as a newlywed, yeah, call the place and time. This house is built of oak and stone.
Okay, J.D., we're ready to try again. We'll try a different line this time.
Is she on?
Yeah, should be there.
Hello?
Kaya, there now?
Oh, J.D., I can barely hear you. The other person who spoke, I can hear them fine. We might have to do translation.
I don't know what to think. Glenn, can you do anything with my voice?
Yeah.
I can't hear J.D.
Okay, well, I guess there's really nothing more we can do with that. Let's just go to the second of the pieces of music of Wishing Chair and see if we can figure something out.
Chocolate cake with the hula girls.
Okay, slight change of plan, since we weren't able to get the telephone system to connect J.D. and Kaya. We're going to have Deborah Bell interview Kaya, and Kaya's on the phone now.
Hello.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Kaya?
Yes.
How is that spelled?
K-I-Y-A.
Okay. And you're one of the members of Wishing Chair, which is a duo?
Yes.
Okay.
There's two of us.
And who's the other member?
Miriam Davidson. She's
okay.
The multi-instrument person.
And you're the lead vocal?
Yeah. I write the songs and sing most of the lead. But Miriam, it's kind of like two leads.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that you were in town a couple of years ago at the Houston International Festival, which is taking place now again.
Oh, wonderful.
And that J.D. was very impressed with you.
Oh, wonderful.
And I take a lot of my musical advice from J.D. Doyle, being that he is the expert on all queer music.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yes, he is. And that, I'm supposed to say, make sure you go to queermusicheritage.com, and you can learn all about Wishing Chair. You can hear some of their music, and you will learn that they're going to be coming to Houston May 2nd. That's a Friday night. It's a house concert, which means it's a very intimate event. Brenda Moran is the host for that, and so we're looking forward very much to having you play here. Now, personally, I don't know that much about your music or your history, so I'm flying blind.
Okay.
I should have like JD like on one ear whispering questions to ask. So how long have y'all been playing together?
Mary and I started playing together in 1995, and we're getting ready to make our eighth CD.
Oh, my gosh, you have 8 CDs?
No, we have 7 right now. We're working on
that. But you will have 8.
Uh-huh.
And where are you based?
In South Carolina, Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Spartanburg, South Carolina. My goodness.
Yes, for many years we were in Kentucky, but we've moved down here.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, are you a couple?
No.
No, you're just musically a couple.
Yes.
Okay, so that, I don't know how that works out if you... if it's like Romanowski and Phillips, they were a couple and they broke up and then they tried to stay together as a duo, but that was problematic. How would you describe your music?
Oh, you know, I get asked that a lot. You'd think I'd have it figured out, but I'd say it's folk and roll.
Yeah, I heard that term as the title of the house concert, folk and roll, and I thought,
Yeah.
So, what gives with that?
Well, I mean, we have a lot. It's just not quite mellow enough to be just folk, and it's too lyric driven to be just rock, you know. So,
it's folk.
It's both
and roll.
Exactly.
And for people who may have never been to a house concert, can you kind of give a description of what takes place?
Well, I hear that this one's going to be about 50 of your new, soon-to-be best friends. Usually what happens is you go and it's in somebody's living room or on their porch, and you just sit in chairs, and they usually have snacks and drinks and the performer plays. It's just like playing a concert, except there's no PA. There's a little bit more conversation between the audience and the performer.
It's more intimate.
And during the break, you get, you know, we like them because we get to meet people and actually get to know, get a sense of the place that we're at. And sometimes when you're playing on a big stage, you know, what you see is dark.
Right.
And
also you really get to learn the stories behind the songs.
Right.
Which I've been producing diva house concerts and we've had a number of performers including Tret Fury and Sonia and Disappear Fear and Martine Locke and Gretchen Phillips. And so I told Brenda, I said, now Brenda, you know, maybe we should hook up here and if we're going to be doing house concerts, because the whole reason we started doing it was just to support women artists.
Yes.
And one of the things that's really kind of magical about this is all the proceeds go to the artist.
Yes.
Now, sometimes we do them where we give a percentage to a charity, or there might be a little bit of production cost. We actually have a PA system. I don't know if Brenda's going to use it, but some of our folks invested in having a sound system. Lucy Blue Tremblay was in town, and we were able to use that system for her. Mm-hmm. So it's often acoustic music. Which sometimes gives it a different flavor. The way you hear it live, and especially in that more intimate setting, is a little different than it may sound on a CD.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sorry for the technical difficulties, and one of the bad things about that is it cuts us short in getting to talk to you. But what do you most want people to know about Wishing Chair?
Well, I would say you just need to come see it and see if you like it. That's why I write songs. I'm not talking about it, you know.
She puts it all into the songs and the music. And,
right.
And I can tell she's one of those kind of shy Southern women.
Yes, Miriam is from Philadelphia, but I would definitely represent. I claim both Oklahoma and Kentucky.
Okay, well there you go.
Yeah.
You know Diana Jones.
Oh, I know Diana.
No, love Diana.
Yeah, she's very good.
Yeah. Well, we've also had her. So, you know, there's this whole movement afoot of women. And there's guys that do it, too. Tom Yeager and Sarah Draper have Songbird Sanctuary, and they have concerts over at their place, and they're big-time supporters of KPFT. May 2nd, Friday night, very reasonably priced tickets to support Wishing Chair, great music. Brenda Moran is the host, and if you would like to make reservations, call 979-481-9818. I guess that might be a cell number. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know why it's a 979 number. 979-481-3818. And you can also contact me, Deborah Bell, at deborah@queervoices.org, and I'll send you out the information. So thank you so much for being with us on Queer Voices.
All right. Thank you.
Another high-profile gay celebrity is appearing in a public service announcement for GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. Promoting the 11th annual National Day of Silence on U.S. school campuses, Lance Bass of the popular boy band NSYNC told reporters that he wanted to help educate because I'm lucky enough to have been given a voice to be able to talk and grab the attention of people. In the YouTube-posted video, a diverse group of LGBT youth appear with Bass to promote the April 25th event.
Every day, thousands of students are silenced. They are silenced by fear. They are silenced for being who they are. They are friends. They are classmates. They are brothers. They are sisters. They are gay. They are straight. They are you. They are me. They are silenced by anti-lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender bullying and harassment. On April 25th, their silence will be heard around the country. Hundreds of thousands of students will participate in the National Day of Silence. This year, the Day of Silence is dedicated to the memory of Lawrence King, a 15-year-old from California who was shot and killed by a classmate while sitting in class. Friends say he was murdered because he was gay. Whoever they are, whatever their backgrounds or beliefs, these students will take action because they believe that the bullying and harassment must end. What are you going to do to end the silence?
That was Lance Bass of the popular group NSYNC promoting this year's National Day of Silence. For more information, log on to www.dayofsilence.org. We are not staying silent about the latest movie from a veteran writer-director. We'll all have the chance to kiss the bride later in the program. The Estrella Lesbian Foundation for Justice is celebrating 30 years of support for queer and feminist causes around the world. Correspondents Dixie Treichel and John Townsend chat with Communications Director Jennifer Einhorn about the organization's generous history.
Estrella is the only foundation in the world that's solely dedicated to funding LGBTI organizations in the U.S. and internationally. So, for instance, in Thailand, a group used our grant to educate and lobby their Ministry of Health to publicly state that homosexuality was not a mental disorder. Now, that happened here in the U.S. in the 70s, but for them, it was really a transformational moment. We fund a group in Buenos Aires that used the money that we gave them to purchase a camcorder to document the physical abuse and discrimination that trans people were suffering at the hands of police. So from things in places like that internationally to the homophobic Bible Belt in Appalachia, where women are literally living in fear in mountains because they can't come out. We hired a cultural worker to do outreach to them. To a group in Minneapolis, actually, District 202, they have a youth support network. Our grantees are separated by languages and continents, but the strategies that they're really enacting are all kind of going in the same direction.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the foundation.
We were founded 30 years ago when there was a time when there were women's foundations that were forming, but the support really wasn't there, particularly for women of color and for lesbians. Now, at the time, forming an organization focusing on lesbians was really an anomaly. So the fact that the Australian Lesbian Foundation for Justice still exists in that form has been a credit to these women who over the years have really kind of walked the walk. And one thing I do want to say is that our name is the Australian Lesbian Foundation for Justice, but the work that is done by our grantees benefits really the social justice movement as a whole. The example that I gave in Thailand, when the Ministry of Health stated that, it wasn't just a benefit for lesbians, it really transformed the community. And the National Center for Lesbian Rights is a former grantee of ours. Now, they pioneered second parent adoption, and it was for the whole community. You know, I've been involved in social justice work and doing communication work with political groups for a very long time, and you hear it over and over again about Australia, but they have really such incredible integrity. Catherine Acey has been the executive director for 20 of its 30 years, and we just had actually a big celebration in her honor. And Australia really kind of traverses the women's community and the women's foundations, the philanthropic community, as well as the gay and lesbian, transgender, bisexual community, which is highly unusual.
You recognize that arts, literature, and music are all part of activism.
At Australia, you know, people come to activism in different ways. You know, not everybody is meant or has the desire or time to stand in the street with a placard at a vigil or at a protest. I mean, that's an integral and critical part, that visibility to fueling social justice. But at Australia, we recognize and celebrate the arts as a critical component to changing hearts and minds. And we firmly believe that. Each year we have a Lesbian Writers Fund as well as a Lesbian Visual Arts Fund that we give awards to. In fact, one of the Lesbian Writers awardees this past year was from St. Paul. I believe she's a poet. And we gave a grant to post-production work for Freeheld, which actually just won an Academy Award for the short form documentary, which if you haven't seen the film, you can go to freeheld.com and see a trailer. But it's the story of a terminally ill police officer in New Jersey who was struggling to secure benefits for her partner. We've given a grant to the Brandon Tina story, Out at Work. And in our minds, it's just as important as any other kind of activism.
This is a generalization, but lesbians who are activists are very populist and are very much about grassroots level. And they care a lot about the whole picture.
With Australia, you know, there's a term that we don't really like to use too much because it sounds kind of jargony, but it's called, you know, intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be kind of like the flavor of the month in many ways with kind of social justice organizations. But to be really candid about it, it really is about that, because at Australia, like many other organizations, it's not just about one movement or one group of people, because in the end, what affects gay and lesbian groups, what affects trans groups, is the same thing that affects folks who are dealing with economic hardships and race hardships and race issues. So if we focus on one particular area, we don't get a lot of traction.
That was Communications Director Jennifer Einhorn of the Australia Lesbian Foundation for Justice in conversation with This Way Out correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend. You can find the foundation online at www.astraea.org, and that's spelled A-S-T-R-A-E-A.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
Whenever it might turn to be the man upon the altar, when is it my turn to have all the things that I do?
It's been over 5 years since the last film from out gay filmmaker C.J. Cox. So with his Kiss the Bride heading down the aisle at theaters across the U.S., This Way Out entertainment reporter Steve Pride sat down with the man behind Sweet Home Alabama and Latter Days and the stars of his new film to toast the wedding and make a grab for the bouquet.
Hello, I'm C.J. Cox, director of Kiss the Bride.
So what's the movie about?
We have a small town wedding, kind of starting with Ryan and Alex, and who shows up at the wedding but Ryan's high school boyfriend, Matt, who is surprised when he gets the invitation and realizes that Ryan is marrying a woman.
You can't. We go to print in a week. We don't even have a cover.
It's this weekend. Please come. I need to see you. He underlined the please.
Oh, my God. You love him.
No, I don't.
You totally love him. You want to wreck the wedding and steal him for yourself. You are so Julia Roberts at my best friend's wedding right now.
This is completely a humanitarian mission here. If anything, I'm so Angelina Jolie right now that I wouldn't be surprised if they sent me home with a dusky little baby. Seriously. He was my first boyfriend. He's the one who brought me out.
And he flies off to his hometown after 10 years to try and talk some sense into this guy.
Are you sure getting married is what you really want?
Jeez, Matt, how can you be sure about anything? Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm sure.
Really? If you're so sure that your life is the be-all and end-all for you, then what's going on with you here with me? I mean, why are you alone? I mean, you're great. Where's your boyfriend?
And in response, Matt realizes some things about himself. Ryan comes to terms with some truths about himself. And we find out that the character of Alex, who Ryan is engaged to, might be a little more than we give her credit for.
I invited him.
You? Me staying at the house? Keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer, is that it?
No. You're not my enemy, Matt. You're my unanswered question.
One of the things that has been particularly gratifying for me traveling with the movie to film festivals is hearing sort of the discussions that go on after the movie about, you know, what people think of the ending, what people think of certain events that occur in the middle of the movie. And I wanted to make a movie that would, first and foremost, be entertaining, and I think that it definitely is. But at the same time, I think that it leaves some room for discussion, that opens up some ground for people to talk about things that perhaps aren't widely discussed.
Have you been with other guys?
No.
But you think of other guys?
No, but I think about you. I don't know, maybe I'm bi.
No, oh, come on. Bias is the last thing gay men say when they finally leave their wives.
I love Alex, but I was in love with you, too. Sometimes I still think about what that was like.
In the gay community, I've always found it interesting that the notion of, especially male bisexuality, is just completely dismissed as denial. And, you know, I wanted to approach that subject from maybe a position where it wasn't just something that we laughed about or something that was just a cover, that, you know, maybe explore the possibilities of one of our characters. The fact that his first love was a man and didn't preclude the notion that he might really be in love with this woman that he's engaged to, and at least asking those questions.
For gay favorite Tori Spelling, playing the character of Alex wasn't a stretch.
Alex and I were really on the same page personality-wise. I am the biggest believer in romance and love. So much so that, you know, I feel like as people get older, you get more and more jaded about love as you see what goes into it and what doesn't go into it. And I've never lost that kind of idealistic love that I've been hoping for. And I feel like that's the reason that I'm so happily married right now, is that I refuse to give up that dream, no matter what relationship I was in. And I think Alex is the same way. She, at all costs, you know, she just believes in romance. Whether it costs her relationship or not, she's going to stick true to herself, that it's about the commitment, it's about the end game of being with your soulmate. Everyone wants to find their soulmate.
And what I love about Alex's character in the movie, in addition to that, is that in order to have that romantic ideal, that she's utterly pragmatic, that she doesn't want that to be based on just this purely idealistic notion. She's saying, like, if she's going to have that romance, that it needs to be real and it needs to be based on the truth. And if the truth is something different, and if Ryan would be happier elsewhere, then she's enough of a romantic and enough of a pragmatist to say, okay, then go and do that. You know, find your truth. And if your truth is here in this commitment, then let's do it. But let's not do it for the wrong reasons.
For both Latter Days and Kiss the Bride, the openly gay filmmaker had to direct straight actors in hot gay love scenes.
It's interesting because, for me, they always end up being much sexier after the fact. Because while you're doing something, I mean, first foremost, my concern is making sure that the actors feel safe and protected. And so that's always a concern, and it's always kind of stressful for me. And at the same time, then there's just the mechanics of getting people to, like, okay, hit your mark, we're going to change the camera angle, so do this, which sometimes can take some of the spontaneity out of a moment. So it usually isn't until editing that those scenes actually take on that sexiness.
And as for those straight boys?
I'm James O'Shea.
Philip Carner.
We were lucky enough to be involved from the table reading aspect of this, so we got to help bring it to life to begin with, and we knew what we were getting into.
I think those concerns matter less and less. I mean, especially with, you know, Brokeback Mountain and some of these films that have been done that are just amazing stories. You know, it has nothing to do with whether there's gay characters or straight characters, but it's good storytelling. And I think that's always what it comes down to. You know, is it a story that I believe in? And this film is about love and commitment and friendship, and I think those are really wonderful things.
What do you want the audience to take away from the film?
What I would love people to take away from the movie is a sense that gay or straight, sometimes our identity is more fluid and open to change, and that there is sometimes a huge difference between marriage and true commitment.
This has been a conversation with CJ Cox, Tori Spelling, Philip Carner, and James O'Shea. Kiss the Bride is from Regent Releasing. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I've seen a thousand movie kisses, been the groomsman all my life. I wanna be the leading man sometime. It's not that I am uncommitted, I work hard to get it right, but not enough it seems to win this fight. Still I go on and on, believing in myself, 'cause I am strong, so strong.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Erica Springer, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Wagner with Bill Kelly, Dixie Trichel and John Townsend, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Pink Floyd and Stephen Franz performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and I'm in here in the studio with Lily Roddy.
Good evening.
Yes, and on the phone we have Jenny Bolin.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you? Well, and you're probably wondering why we're all here. And the reason is that coming this Saturday is the Houston Transgender Unity Banquet. And Jenny is the keynote speaker at there. Jenny, are you looking forward to coming down here?
I cannot wait. It's going to be great.
Good, good, good. Well, tell us something about yourself before we get all the details of the banquet itself.
Well, gee, I live here in Maine, and I live here with my family, my partner, and two children. I'm the author of a number of books, but the one that you folks probably know best is called She's Not There, which was one of the first best-selling books by a transgender American. It was followed up in the spring by a new book called I'm Looking Through You, which is a book about growing up in a haunted house and also a meditation on what it means to be haunted, which is something that affects not just trans people, but everybody. So I live here in Maine. I teach English at a college called Colby, and I'm on my way to Houston to speak at the Unity Banquet to talk about these issues and anything else people want to hear about.
Well, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm emceeing it, so I've been working on your introduction. Anything I should say, you know, that you want me to say about you?
Oh, really, very little. Just, you know, here's Jenny Boylan, and you know, I mean, what I do as a speaker is I try to just stick with what I do best, which is telling stories. That, you know, the transgender movement has got so many different voices in it and so many different agendas and even different embodiments of being trans. And I think we're all doing different work, and mostly I see that as a strength. So what I try to do is, you know, the one thing that I know I can do confidently, which is to tell stories, both my own and that of other people. I'll probably tell a few stories from that are in the new book, I'm Looking Through You, and maybe a couple things from She's Not There as well.
Okay.
And I want to say, Jenny, that we are so looking forward to having you here at our banquet. We're just so excited. You're just all the buzz here in Houston.
Well, that's really very funny. You know, it's funny. I've traveled for the last, 7-8 years since She's Not There came out. I have traveled the country. If I say travel the world, it sounds like I'm just on a plane all the time, but I have spoken overseas too. But generally, I've not spoken in the Deep South, the Old South, as we might say, from here in Maine, within view of the Canadian border. It's always struck me as very, very odd, and something that I'm very kind of. Well, it's always, I've wanted to speak down there, particularly in Texas. So. It's really kind of, you know, a dream come true. It's a real opportunity for me, and I'm really grateful that you guys invited me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Lily, tell us some of the particulars, where it is, and the information on the banquet itself.
Okay, I would love to. Thank you.
Lily.
Hi there. This is our 16th annual Transgendered Unity Banquet, and we've originally got together to kind of build unity and support within the transgender community. The banquet will be on this Saturday, September.
April. It's April.
Not that I know what the date is. April 26, 2008, this Saturday. It starts at 6 p.m. and goes until 1 o'clock in the morning. It's at the Sheraton Houston Brook Hollow Hotel. And that's at 3000 North Loop West, Houston, Texas, essentially at the corner of 290 and 610. And we have it's a wonderful banquet room and wonderful hotel staff. And we're having wonderful dinner awards, a wonderful speaker with Jennifer Boylan. So we're really, this will be a great, great event.
I love the whole concept of the Unity Banquet, I know that the title for this event was not chosen by accident. I think as trans people, you know, we're all over the place. You know, we've got drag queens and M to Fs and F to Ms and transsexuals and genderqueer people and, you know, and a huge pile of people who don't have or want a name to hang around their neck. But the one thing we know is that we all are gender variant in some way, and usually what happens is that the fact that we all differ from each other is something that ends up dividing us, and surely it's something that we've seen in the last year has divided us from our gay and lesbian brethren and sistren, in, you know, not just politically but all around the block. So I think it is nice, just for only for a night, if only in Houston, for us to celebrate coming together and to celebrate the things that we have in common, and also to get jazzed up to take this to continue on with the struggle, so that we continue to do good work into the future.
Oh, absolutely. And this is Jennifer and Egan. The history is always, because I was there like Lily was in the beginning, was we were the community here, the transgender community, and it's many variations were divided. They had their own little support groups, and each group had its own little fiefdom, as if you will, and we never worked together. And it wasn't until a few people decided that we can do more if we join together and formed the Houston Transgender Unity Committee, where each separate organization had a chair at the table so that we could all sit and talk about the things we had in common, not the things that were dividing us. And
right.
That's what it all came from. And then once that happened, we had to celebrate that unity, which is why we have a banquet.
The issue of unity is one that's at the heart of this new book that I'm traveling around reading from, and which I'll read from at the banquet. I'm looking through you, which is now out from the Broadway Doubleday imprint of Random House, is a book that, on the surface of it, is a memoir about growing up in a haunted house. And the book does have ghosts in it, but it's the other kind of haunting in the book are the ghosts of the heart. And by that I mean all the ways in which people can get psychologically haunted. So there are the ghosts of people that characters in the book have lost and never been able to let go. There's the ghosts of the people we have been, and for me as a child, there was a ghost of the person I might become. Now, speaking as a grown-up trans woman, I look back on having had a boyhood and wonder, where is that boy and what does that mean? So all of these are ways in which people can get really fragmented and see their life not as one unified whole, but as a series of disjointed episodes. And that's the way I've noticed that people get people get sad, people get kind of messed up in the head until they can see their life as one story, as one, the unified theory of being alive. And so for me, what that's about is telling stories and finding a connection between the past and the future, between all the pieces, all the people that we've been. And so it's a ghost story, but it's not, the Scooby-Doo type. It's the ghost, that live in our heart that we all need to make peace with.
I would do a Scooby-Doo imitation, but I'm not.
Ranger? let's see who the transsexual really is. Jennifer Boylan, the writer. Yeah, that's what she wanted you to think. But Jennifer Boylan never really existed. All right, well, anyway.
Oh, well, that's very interesting, the way you laid that out as far as your book is concerned, because I recognize in myself and with other people that we remember our own lives in as if it were a snapshot in a book somewhere, and we never see it as the constant mosaic of the change and as a whole.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think some trans people, particularly transsexuals who've been through the whole transition and everything, can get into this thing of before and after, and even refer to their younger selves in the third person, I understand the reasons for stealth, and I understand the reasons to walk away from the past that might have brought people discomfort or sadness. But, mm-hmm. Everybody needs a past, and that's not just trans people, that's everybody. Anybody who's had a trauma in their life needs to build a bridge between where they are now and where they started out. Because otherwise, you really can be a person who gets on in a different way, and maybe you have a present, but you don't have a past. I think we all need a past. We all need a life that's fully integrated. Just as I hope this Unity Banquet can integrate all the different kinds of trans people in the Houston area.
Well, also, they'll not only be trans people, but many from the gay and lesbian community and bisexual community. It's grown in over the years to encompass all of the GLBT community.
Even with our straight allies who will be there to support us. So we really have a great sense of unity there.
Yeah, that's cool. It's going to be a great party.
And some of the other things, Lily, tell us some of the other things. There's auctions, and one thing I want to make sure that people understand when they hear of us talk about this Unity Banquet, that the proceeds from there go to a scholarship fund, do
Actually,
they not?
Very much so. They go. We use our money to support trans people who are in school and, just the best way we can, which is to educate people and put them out there to help us and help themselves.
Well,
so we're certainly doing that.
Helping with scholarships is about one of the best things we can do, because trans people face so many obstacles in trying to get from here to there. And sometimes we look to the medical community or the therapeutic community for help with our journeys. And a lot of the times, most of the time, that's going to take money. So a way that we can obtain that kind of power in the culture, and again, this is an English teacher talking, so forgive me, but I mean, one of the ways we can do it is through education. That's why I always give the least popular advice that I give when people ask, young trans people ask me, what can I do? I say, well, if you can stand it, get your degree, finish school, and, you know, get yourself out there so that you will, it's the one thing that we can do to, you know, swim upstream. So, if, you know, in the culture, that is. So if we have that scholarship money helping people get through school, that will bring people power to their own lives. That's, you know, and that's power they don't have. So good on you.
Well, and that's one of the, once unity was a reality here in the city where all the organizations were working together, it was, what is the one area that our community needs the most help? And that was in education,
yeah,
which was the reason behind starting the Transgender Scholarship Fund.
Exactly. And part of our goals over this next year will actually be to reach out to some of the trans teens who often end up on the street or homeless. So we're actually working on even a larger project.
That's great. I mean, the hard thing when you say to people, you know, finish your education, is that, you know, I remember being a trans, you know, person when I was an adolescent, and, you know, I couldn't finish school because I was too unhappy there, and I was too distracted. I couldn't study. I could hardly read, you know. And somehow I managed to tough it out and wound up, you know, an English professor of all things. So the support that the banquet's going to generate is going to, you know, that's going to really change lives, so that's really a good thing.
Well, and that's part of the mandate from the Unity Committee is to educate and not only bring our community together, but educate and act as a single voice of our community in Houston, which has created the scenario why many of the local organizations over the years have added transgender to their names and their mission statements, so that, you know, the T is no longer silent.
Yeah, well, that would be a nice change. That would be good, because so often we are the little caboose at the end, you know, people give us lip service, but there's a way in which a lot of times, you know, I know we've all had the experience, mostly in the past, but there are times when gay and lesbian allies don't necessarily grasp the issues for trans people any better than straight people, and that's hard. But it's been a truth. I'm thinking that that's changing now as more and more of our stories get told, and we become more visible. That's my hope, anyhow.
Well, the sad thing is that many people make decisions about transgenders, and I'm talking within the GLB community, without ever knowing one of us.
Yeah. It's my mother used to have an expression, which is, it's hard to hate anyone whose story you know. So one of the reasons I've tried to tell stories is just because I think it, you know, it shines a light on the experiences of what we're going through. I mean, you know, in my business as a teacher of writing, there's an old cliche, which is show, don't tell. I'm sure you all remember that from, you know, elementary school. If you're going to tell a story,
I certainly remember that.
Show
I still it. Use it.
Well, the idea being that it's always better to present something or someone demonstrating the facts of their lives through dialogue and through you know, scene setting and the like, as opposed to lecture, as opposed to telling, as opposed to direct authorial assertion. I found that nothing has made the point for trans lives, or for that matter anybody's lives, than showing. There's been plenty of telling over the last few decades where people kind of get up and give angry gender lectures, And that's good, because we need that. We do need to tell people the facts of our lives. But I also believe that sometimes showing it through storytelling is the way that makes people open up their eyes. I remember the first time I was on that Oprah Winfrey show, which is something I love to be able to say. Yes, the first time I was on the Oprah show, somebody emailed me after I was on the show. Conservative person from the Midwest emailed me and said, "You know, Jenny Boylan, the weird thing about you is you're almost like a person someone could know." To which, you know, of course, I wanted to say, "Well, you're damn right I'm a person someone could know. In fact, lots of people do not know me." But what she meant by that, of course, is that, you know, oh, transgender people aren't people who are in my community. Trans people aren't people who I would run into. And the fact of the matter is, of course they are. We're everywhere, and most of us are doing the best we can to live, I hate to say normal, but let's just say, to live good lives in the place that where we are. And so the way that we make the point of our good lives public is simply by telling our stories in a way that is unashamed, and which makes other people put themselves in our heels.
I know. Well, we have been talking with Jenny Boylan. She is going to be the keynote speaker at the Houston Transgender Unity Banquet, which is going to be April 26th. That's this coming Saturday. It is at the Sheridan Houston Brook Hollow, and that's at 290 and 610. You can go to what website to get tickets?
You may go to HTUC, Houston Transgender Unity Committee.org, and you can find out other information, tickets, some history about the banquet, information about Jennifer Boylan. So,
and as long as we're all rattling off our URLs, I'll invite anyone who's interested to hang out at www.jenniferboylan.net, which has everything from my touring schedule to excerpts from the book to some glamorous photographs. So check it out at jenniferboylan.net.
All right. Thank you, Jenny Boylan and Lily Roddy. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Thanks, everybody.
Do, do, do. Static is raining on the radio. I am searching for a smile, so I turn the knobs and move along. Searching for a tune that makes my heart beat, shakes my spine, makes me move my feet, pick up my pace and hum a song. You are a classic butter keeper, always make me stronger when I'm weaker. Hey now, my boyfriend's back. Remember riding down the highway, holding your hand as you lean my way. A smile, a whistled melody.
A little bit of Ron Morrison, Boyfriend, there to help us close things out this evening.
Absolutely.
Well,
let's close it out then.
Does that mean we're closing it out?
I guess so.
Well, let's thank our guest.
Absolutely. Well, I'll just thank Jenny Boylan again for calling in. She's going to be the keynote speaker at the Houston Transgender Unity Banquet this Saturday night at 6:30 at the Sheridan Brook Hollow.
And we want to thank Wishing Chair for our technologically challenged interview. And I know JD was really disappointed that that didn't work out quite right, but they'll be here May 2nd in a house concert. And of course,
on Thursday, be sure to go out and eat at Dine Out for Life. We had Kelly McCann on. from AFH. So a great cause.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Absolutely. It all counts all day long. So.
And then, of course, on our Lesbian Affairs segment, Nancy Ford talking about the Kindred Spirit Celebration this Saturday night, April the 26th.
And if you missed any part of our show, you can pick it up on iTunes. Just do a search for Queer Voices or KPFT, and you can subscribe to our show.
It downloads to my iPod every week.
Yes.
Is or you can go to the archives still.
Of course it's free.
You can go back to old shows from the past on the archives at KPFT.
Yeah, and if you subscribe, it just downloads automatically.
www.kpft.org.
Yeah.
And we're heard at 90.1 FM in Houston and 89.5 Galveston, where they're having Splash this Saturday. So.
Yeah.
Well,
and next week on Queer Voices, it's J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. In the second hour, J.D. will interview singer-songwriter Kristen Hoffman about his involvement with the Mumps, Klaus Naomi, and his own career. And, of course, there will be lots of Kristen Hoffman's music as well. In the first hour next week, it's Judy Reeves talking with Joan Devlin about her first novel, The Pieces Form a Heart, But She Didn't Have a Clue. That's the title of the book. The book is somewhat autobiographical and features several Houston personalities and this radio station. That's next week on Queer Voices. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
USA versus Al Arian is an intimate family portrait that documents this American Muslim family's desperate attempt to fight terrorism charges leveled by the U.S. government. In February 2003, university professor and pro-Palestinian activist Sami Al Arian was arrested in Tampa, Florida. For 2.5 years, Al Arian was held in solitary confinement, denied basic privileges, and given limited access to his attorneys. Follow this case through the eyes of Al Arian's family during the 6-month trial in a post-9/11 world. The screening of this award-winning documentary will be on Saturday, April 26th at 7 p.m. Showtime is at the Rice Media Center, located at the corner of Stockton and University Boulevard. For more information, visit www.hpff.org.
Explore World of Entertainment April 19th, 20th, April 27th, and 28th at the Houston International Festival. Spotlighting Out of Africa in downtown Houston. Make the Out of Africa Zone your first stop. Visit the Mountain Carved Church of Lalibela.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.